Welcome back to episode 41 of the Run It Three Ways podcast, the first recorded on Kenyan Wi-Fi, so please bear with us if the audio isn't top tier. We've got plenty to chat about this week, including an injury update from myself after 12 days of no running, a pretty handsome long run from Tom, and of course, Callum continues to crush his training as he prepares for the Mansfield Mud. How are we, boys?
That was a great intro. Very good, Ben.
You can tell you've had fuck all to do thinking about that, Ben.
Thanks, mate. Yeah, I wrote that one last night about 10 o'clock. Sat outside the dinner halls, get some decent Wi-Fi.
Yeah, rolled right off the tongue, that as well. Very good.
How are you enjoying your surroundings, Ben? Talk us through where you are, if you can, without being... I know you're in a public space, so don't say anything.
Yeah,
rude.
No. I'm loving it. I've been in Kenya now since last Friday. And on recording, it's Wednesday, so I'm almost at the week here in a 10. I'm currently sat in the sort of communal space here at the camp that nobody seems to be using at the moment, which is quite good because I've got it all to myself. And it also happens to be the best place for Wi-Fi on the campus, if you like. So, yeah, staying at the high altitude training center here in a 10, which is where I stayed the last time I came. Here for 6 weeks on what was going to be a training camp. But when I talk you through what I've been going through over the last few weeks, it's more of a rehab camp. But hopefully, I had some good news today, boys, that I should be able to get at least a couple of runs in Kenya while I'm here, but not for another couple of weeks yet. So, yeah, how are you guys doing?
I'm all good. How are you, Tom?
Yeah, I'm good. I just had some lunch.
What do you have?
Well, so they were wraps, but they had, it was like avocado mayo in there, which was yummy.
Avocado mayo?
Yeah.
Is that from a bottle or is that homemade?
Homemade. Sammy done it. I think you basically just mash the avocado with a bit of mayo, like vegan mayo, together, and it creates a really delicious little sort of sauce, paste. So
that
I had
makes
that.
Sense.
And then there's some little vegan bacon bits in there. And some grilled mushrooms, which were also delicious. So, yeah. And I've just polished off some strawberries as well. So, I'm feeling sufficiently fueled for
bloody
this
hell, that
podcast.
That is super vegan. That's crazy. What a vegetarian meal.
Get that. Very good.
Lovely stuff. Lovely stuff. And how's things in general, Tom?
Things in general. Oh, yeah. I'm all right, Callum. Thanks for asking. Yeah.
Good.
I mean, it's a bit busy at the moment. This is probably the worst time of year from a work standpoint. Also the best time of year with lots of stuff going on, but it's the worst in terms of actually having any sort of life outside of work. But yeah, apart from that, doing very well.
Good stuff. Good stuff. I've been listening to a lot of different podcasts recently. I always have something. I don't really like sitting and working in silence, and I always have something on in the background. And one podcast that I came across on YouTube that I had on was with Mr. Beast's editor. Any Mr. Beast fans out there?
Makes YouTube Dan. Something like that.
Sorry, I lie. I don't think his official term is editor. I think he's like a consultant. He's this Irish guy, right? Basically. He's definitely not called Dan. But this Irish geezer, anyway, apparently writes all the... Well, I don't know why I said apparently, he does. He was explaining how he writes all the introductions for a lot of YouTubers' videos about how to, like, you know, measure the retention and get people hooked and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
So as a result, I thought, you know, in order to hook the listeners into this episode, let's give them a little bit of a, you know, juiciness at the start. You know, let's make them think, what else could be revealed? So
what's the cliffhanger for this week then, Callum?
Well, exactly. So I was looking through the listeners' questions, and I was thinking, I wonder what people want to know and what will they sit and tune in for, or scroll through the episode to try and find the answer. So to be revealed in this episode, Ben is going to talk us through what each of his tattoos mean. So if you've ever thought, what do Ben's tattoos mean, and you're thinking, what the hell is that on his arm? You know, I've seen that on his leg. Well, keep listening, and you better listen to this full episode, because at some point randomly, we're going to tell you exactly what they mean. So thanks to Jack for sending in that question. So yeah, keep yourself locked into this episode if you want to find out what the ink means.
It's a good question, to be fair, isn't it, that?
It's a great question. And also, yeah. I feel like a lot of our listeners, as much as I'm sure they appreciate our ramblings, Tom, like, they've probably been hooked in through Ben's wider audience, and they probably are wondering, you know, wonder what his tattoos mean. So I thought, you know, might be a nice way to keep them listening.
Good stuff.
Brilliant. I love it. Mr. Beast intros on the Run It Freeways podcast.
I know. There you go.
Good
next
stuff.
Next episode, we spent £5 million getting a homeless person to run a 5K PB. That would go down well.
You'd actually might be onto something there. You never know.
Who knows? Who knows? Do you want to run us through what you've been kind of experiencing then, Ben? Because I can't remember where we were up to on the last episode, because since then, I feel like we've had a lot of conversations privately, us three, and you've also released YouTube/Instagram content about what's been going on. But I think the last time we spoke was the day you were going for your scan, right?
Yeah.
What's happened since then?
Yeah, so that evening I went for a scan and I had my hip area scanned. Basically, the place I went to get my scan, Living Room Health, very kindly offered me a scan at very late, last minute, completely free of charge in exchange for a bit of content across Instagram, YouTube, whatever. They don't offer like femoral scan reason, but they did say like, come in, we'll scan your hip and it should show up on the scan if you have a stress fracture in the area that I was sort of displaying most of my symptoms. It was the very top of my femur, just below the femoral, no, it's in the femoral shaft, below the sort of like hip area, if that makes sense. So I went along, had a scan hours later. Basically the scan said that it was a bit of an interesting one, really. It couldn't be completely conclusive that I did have a stress fracture. However, there was, from the scan, there was an edema, which is like a of bone or an area of, basically an area of white on the MRI scan where I was feeling the pain, which could have suggested a possible stress reaction or possible stress fracture. So the scan came back. I was like, what does this really mean? Since then I've had a few chats with a couple of different physios and bone specialists, and we basically come to the conclusion that with the results and based on the symptoms that I've been having, and basically could literally isolate the pain to the area that showed up on the MRI scan, that I definitely had something wrong with my femur. Whether it's a stress reaction or a stress fracture, it was really hard to determine from the scan. So I guess since then I've been able to cross train pain free, which has been a really good sign. And when I say that, that's what I've heard from physios. A lot of people with stress fractures sometimes have to be completely off weight bearing exercise. So cross training would still fall under that category some people have heard horror stories about 4 months. So luckily I haven't had that degree of stress fracture. I guess fast forward 12 days. Today I had my first consultation with Rose from Podium Health. Podium Physiotherapy. Who helped Tom through his stress fracture. We had a 45-minute consultation this morning and basically came to the conclusion that, based off my symptoms, that I have a stress reaction, which is going to be around 4 to 6 weeks of no running. And I'm currently 12 days in. So, yeah, things are progressing well. Still able to basically maintain a fairly decent level of base level sort of exercise in the gym across the bike, the elliptical and swimming. And I should be able to start building things back after about between 4 to 6 weeks based on a few factors that such as the hop test and symptoms over the next sort of 2 week period.
Yeah, I was going to say, Ben, so what's the signal? Because obviously, if you were in England right now, I presume you would go for another MRI, correct? And it'd be specifically to your femur, and you'd try and actually work out what the problem is. Obviously, because of the context of where you are, you can't do that. But what will be the kind of what will cut the red tape for you to be able to start doing some sort of running again? Will it be that you don't feel any pain when you specifically do a run? Is it kind of like, what's the symptoms that you need to go away, basically?
Yeah, so
The
that's a very
reason,
good question.
sorry, the context for why I ask is because if you remember when you first felt it coming on the podcast, you were kind of saying how you were almost fine running with it and you had a bit of awareness, but you actually couldn't really feel it when you were running. So what's to
Yeah.
say, like, that you don't just end up doing that again? Do you see what I mean?
Yeah. So basically, after 4 weeks of no running, I'm going to do the hop test, which is basically you load your femur by hopping on one leg, and if you can still feel pain and discomfort there, then basically you're not ready to start running again. So that's the simplest way of putting it. And also with all bone related injuries, anything related to bone takes a minimum of 4 to 6 weeks to recover. So a lot longer than, say, a muscular injury, which maybe a week, 2 weeks later, you can start to feel a little bit better. But that being said, I've been really lucky with the way things have been progressing so far. In fact, probably a lot quicker than I actually thought they would. So I've been keeping a diary of levels of pain, when I feel discomfort, that sort of thing. And touch wood, since day 7 of no running, when I'm at day 12 now, I haven't actually felt any pain whatsoever in the femur. When I'm cross training, when I'm walking around, doing weight exercise. So touch wood, it's looking like it's a very minor, if it is a stress fracture, it's very minor, but it's more than likely a stress reaction, that which the recovery process is a lot quicker, or a lot less prolonged. But it's a case of building things back very slowly. So it won't be a case of after 4 weeks, I'll have the green flag, you can just go run 100-mile weeks again. It's going to be a very gradual process of maybe the first week I will do 5 kilometers of running. The next week I'll do maybe, I don't know, 20 kilometers, and it will build back very slowly based on what I can do.
Yeah.
And also, one other thing to add is I'm working basically at the moment on like a 24-hour period. So I'm trying to do something, say, for example, I did a bike session yesterday. I wasn't sure how my body was going to respond to that, and then I have to monitor the symptoms after the 24 hours. So touch wood, since that bike session yesterday, I haven't felt any pain. So that's a good sign that I was able to do the session on the bike, didn't aggravate the femur, and the same process will take place with the running. So I'll go on my first run, which will maybe be something like 5 minutes of running, with like 1 minute running, 1 minute walking, whatever, and then 24 hours after that, I'll assess, did that cause any area of pain? And then I'll have to just basically go from there. So it's going to be a very slow process, but given the symptoms and what I've experienced, very low level, like dull ache in my femur, compared to what some people have is excruciating pain, which means they can't walk. Things are looking fairly good. So yeah, that's an injury update, I guess.
Yeah, and the final kind of piece from me was just, have from conversations you've had, have you been able to work out why you think it may have happened? Obviously, the obvious thing for anyone to say is just like, oh, overtraining, or like you've done more running. But are you able to look at any other variables, and kind of have you, now you've had time to process it, thought about any other things that, oh, maybe it was this with my diet, or this equipment I was using, or do you get what I mean? Like any sort of different things that kind of could have had an impact, or is that not something you've really been able to kind of pin down?
Yeah, no, definitely. I've had a look at back at my Strava. So initially, I felt the dull ache. I managed to pinpoint the exact day, which was the 6th of October. So almost a full month ago. And that was the first day I felt any sort of dull ache in my quad. It was for the first 3 kilometers, and then it went away. And looking back at my training, I'd done a half marathon in Macedonia. Admittedly, not an all-out race, so my body sort of recovered from that effort fairly quickly, but that doesn't mean that my body, in terms of my bone, was fully recovered. Like, it still had an impact on my body, even though I didn't really feel it, from a more muscular standpoint, I guess. And then just looking back at my training since that half marathon, I've been doing like a hard session every sort of other day. When these sessions that I've been doing, I've been pushing it a little bit more than I usually would. Mainly because I wanted to try and build some half marathon fitness before I raced in Oxford. And I just think looking back at the training, there wasn't a lot of volume, so it wasn't sort of an overuse injury from the amount of volume I was doing, because I think I only was running around 100, 120 kilometers a week during this period. But it was the sort of cumulative intensity across my training. So stress fractures are often caused by overall training load. So it wasn't one run that caused the stress response, whatever you want to call it. It was the overall like intensity of the training volume, which was obviously too high across that sort of probably 4 to 6 week period, I'd say.
Yeah, interesting. I guess it's just a case of being able to look at kind of obviously your training as a whole and really be specific about the details of like, okay, I'm not saying that this is the reason, but obviously you want to look at things like, okay, the type of tempo pace I'm doing, is that potentially a bit too fast? So when I've thought I'm doing tempo sessions, am I pushing my body a little bit too much? You know, what am I eating? Am I making sure that I'm eating enough kind of calories and things that are going to be like good for my bone health? Is it that I should start doing more runs on grass and off-road because of the impact? Do you know what I mean? I guess there's all these little things where they could have no impact at all, and it's just one of these things that's happened. Or it could be that when you come back to running, you start making a concerted effort to think, right, I want to make sure I, you know, build drive to go on the trails once a week as a minimum, or you know, all these kind of different things, I guess. But no, good. I'm glad that you have a clear plan. I guess it's what Tom really benefited from, but it took him a little bit longer because like he didn't have the kind of experience that we've had chatting to Tom, I guess, where you can straight away jump into knowing who to speak to, how long things are going to take, how to kind of process it. So it's good that you've kind of got that light at the end of the tunnel already, which is good.
And on that as well, I know you mentioned Rose, but she was unbelievable with this as well. Like, I know, Ben, when you got your results back and they're a bit inconclusive, you feel a bit lost, don't you? Like, you don't really know what you're looking at, you don't really know how to interpret just these random pictures of scans. So I sent
But
those.
I knew I had something wrong with me, but in terms of like how long it was going to take to recover, that was like it could be six, it could be 2 weeks, it could be like 4 months. Like, I had absolutely no idea based off the MRI scan. So yeah, Rose has been pretty good.
She had no obligation to even look at those scans, really. You're not like a patient of hers or anything, but she did, just out of the kindness of her heart, I suppose. And as a result, you've now got like a pretty conclusive plan by the sounds of it, and at least, you know, the 24-hour monitoring, and then the amount of time that it's probably going to be until you can do your first run back and that sort of thing. Like, yeah, it sounds like you've got the exact same sort of program as me, but just on like a micro scale. So it's 4 to 6 weeks rather than, like 8 weeks of me doing absolutely nothing before I could try cross training, for example. So yeah, it's good. It's good to hear. It's good that we caught it early enough that you weren't on crutches for 2 weeks right now, you know?
To be honest, looking back at it, I think like I was very, very lucky with that Oxford half marathon that I didn't make it any worse. Because speaking to a lot of other runners who've had stress reactions or stress fractures, they often get a big like flare up, like a sudden onset of pain, which I think you probably had, Tom, when you tried to do those strides that like after your physio said you were fine to just carry on, basically. But I never had like a big flare up. Like, the pain never got any more than a like 3 out of 10, I would say, before I stopped running, which I was very, very lucky with. I think, like, looking back, like I feel like I almost don't deserve to be in the position that I'm in at the moment, in terms of like my recovery is already a lot further down the line than a lot of people who have similar things. But yeah, I think it's just because I thankfully caught it early. One other thing I would say about like the comparison between yourself, Tom, and me, we talked a little bit about it on the consultation, and it's often to do with the area in which you have the stress fracture. So the femoral area, as strange as it sounds, isn't really a high risk area because it's such a big bone. The load is spread out across a like a wide area, I guess, and you've got a lot of muscles that can support the load as well. Whereas where you had your stress fracture in the sacrum, it's a much higher risk area in terms of even like cross training is going to aggravate it because of the location of it and the like fragileness, I guess, of that bone in comparison to, say, a femur.
got a shit deal with a sacral stress fracture, that's for sure. It's
definitely.
It's not really easy to like offload it by doing any kind of cross training. So, yeah, you say you don't feel like you deserve to be in that position, but let's not forget that you've been training to a high level and been very good with strength and conditioning. Like you took bloody kettlebells to the Isle of Mull to do your little circuits and stuff, and you're not one who's just hammering miles for the sake of it and don't do any strength work or don't do anything to complement that training. So yeah maybe that's part of the reason why you've got off lightly, I suppose, in comparison to some other people out there, because you have been doing all of the extra bits and bobs to keep the rest of yourself strong and healthy.
Yeah.
But equally, to play the devil and the angel on the other shoulder, hopefully, like, just because that's my role on this podcast, and it is to try and, you know, put across this side of the argument, is hopefully this does serve as a nice reflection to look at your training and think, what variables could I possibly change? Have I been hammering stuff a bit too hard? And like, you seem, obviously we only get the outward you on this podcast, but like, I would like to think you've been handling it pretty well. Hopefully, you know, it's not taken too much of a toll on you, as much as you like hate the fact you can't run. But equally, for any of us, it would be absolutely shit if we couldn't run for 6 weeks or like, you know, 8 weeks before you can get into proper training or whatever. So even if it's for yourself, from like a I really don't want that to happen again perspective, knowing that you can slightly, or feeling comfortable enough to slightly ease off the training and not feeling guilty that you haven't done 3 hard sessions or a really big long run, or not feeling like you can't say no to participate in a certain event, or, you know, you can't cut a long run slightly shorter than what you had planned or whatever. Because I guess now you've got this sort of you've experienced the consequences of what can happen if you make too many kind of risky decisions, if you get what I mean. So at least going forward,
one thing I've
to do it.
One big takeaway for me is like, looking at like how professionals train, and everybody trains in a block of training, and that's for a reason. Like I do it as well, like with my main A goal races, you have a block of training that supports that race. And I think over the last few months, I did my 10K block, which was great. I got a good result in the Vitality 10K. And then I tried to just build on from that block rather than take a period of rest, which I now, looking back, know is definitely going to be something I'm going to incorporate in the future. And if I say yes to like a brand deal to race a half marathon, then I will only say yes if I have the time to do like a sufficient block for that training period, rather than trying to rush like some of the treadmill sessions that I was doing. Like I did a couple like 2x10K at half marathon pace, 7x3K at almost 10K pace, and just in hindsight, these sessions were just too high in intensity. Yes, I got through them. Yes, I built some decent fitness, but like I think a overall training block is there for a reason, if that makes sense.
Yeah,
periodization. And that's the heart, in my opinion. Sorry, I don't know why my microphone's so far away from me. In my opinion, that's the hardest thing to self-coach, is periodization.
Yeah.
Because you need the objectivity of a coach to say, tell me why you think this race is important. You say why you think it's important. And they say, okay, you've told me 5 races are important. Let's put them in order of priority. Let's work out which of them are going to benefit working towards the main goal. Which of them actually are we better off if we just throw away? And like, I found it really hard to start with, of being like, oh, I want to do every race though. And like, I'm good enough to do every race, and I think I can do well. And I've got that fear of missing out, of not going to this event or letting this team down or whatever. But after you've done it a couple of times, now I'm sat here and I'm like, you know what? I'm probably going to forego a GB vest that I think I'm very capable of getting for Eurocross, because I'm working towards bigger goals in the summer. Mm. And I'm like, I'm so cool with that. I'm like, yeah, it'll be a bit shit that weekend watching Eurocross, being like, I'm not there. But oh well, I'm working for something else. And kind of once you've done it a couple of times, you get over it and it's not that hard. It definitely helps having a coach or friends or teammates to say, right, Ben, you've told me you're doing 8 races in 12 weeks. Let's think about that. Do you get what I mean? Because sometimes we get wrapped up in our own training and what we think we can do without actually having some kind of, logic behind it.
Mm. I think as well, last thing for me on the injury front is it's super beneficial for people to hear someone like yourself, Ben, talking about the recovery process as well. As in when I had my consultation with Rose and I was like, look, realistically, how long is it going to be before I'm back running? And she said 4 to 6 months. I couldn't believe that it was going to take anywhere near like that long. But that was the entire recovery process, from not running to starting cross training to run walk to back to being able to run as I am now. And in fact, it took about 8 months or so, just because of, yeah, a few little ups and downs along the way of it. But I think it's important really to stress that it might be 4 to 6 weeks of no running, but like you said, that doesn't mean you're going to go straight back to full volume. And for anybody listening with an injury and stuff, it's, you probably want to follow the same route of caution, right, with this stuff, and not just rush back to doing a session in your first week where you're allowed to run again. So it'll be interesting to follow that journey with yourself, as someone who was so used to hearing running big miles and doing your double thresholds and racing frequently. It'll be pretty interesting to see how you handle that and navigate it, I suppose, once you are able to do a bit more running.
Yeah, definitely. So yeah, I guess just to summarize my sort of like section, if you like, of training, I don't feel the need to just go through my training week because it's a little bit boring, but basically I'm two weeks into the recovery process. In terms of no running, I've got another 2 weeks of no running at all, but I can start to do things in the gym, build things back a little bit. I've been given the all clear to do 2 sessions on the bike, the elliptical. The pool is, they've, as been, Rose has said, basically the pool is the best in terms of like getting the work done. But only issue is the pool out here in Kenya is not heated, so it's bloody freezing. I've been trying to do a few swims, but I literally, after 20 minutes, my body just starts shivering. So I'm going to try and do a bit more in the pool. But yeah,
that,
I think, yeah, I have to try and find a wetsuit. I'm not sure if they've got any over there.
Oh my God, you lot are chatting up. Just go in the cold, it's fine.
And I, honestly, I've been in there. I thought, no, I'm going to brave it. It took me like 2 hours of shivering when I came out just to get warm again. So the weather hasn't been that warm yet at the moment. It's sort of like 17 degrees, but cloudy. So it's not like you come out of the pool and you can warm yourself up in the sun. So I'm hoping that the weather improves a little bit so I can do a bit more pool work. But yeah, sort of sessions on the bike. The main focus is going to be on the longer reps. So the advice I've been given is to avoid doing the like high intensity, like minute reps where you're absolutely thrashing yourself on the cross train or bike, but focus more on the tempo side of things. So like I can do a 10 minutes tempo session, which will be a lot less impact on my femur than say like a 1 minute super hard, and to keep like the resistance on both the elliptical and bike down and focus more on cadence, which I thought was pretty useful and insightful information.
Good stuff.
Definitely. And obviously, it's just less fatigue on your body generally if your heart rate's not through the roof every 2 minutes, which I often compare it, the same principle as when you've got a cold or you're ill and you're deciding whether to train. You have to remember, when you're training, you're fatiguing your body. It's got less energy to repair whatever it needs to repair, whether it's, you know, clearing a sore throat, getting rid of a hangover, you know, in this case, fixing one of your bones. Like, you need to give your body the energy and the fuel and the time to be able to do all these things. So sometimes you can keep training, and even though you think you're closer to fitness, which you probably are, you might be further away from, you know, being able to recover if you don't balance it. Obviously, in your case, you can sit around for the rest of the day and do nothing in the nice way possible. So you can get away with doing the training. Yeah. But if you were still on your feet all day being a teacher or a doctor or whatever, then which is probably more towards the people that are listening to this, then just be cautious whenever you're ill or injured, because you need to just eat loads and sleep loads if you can to try and recover as fast as possible.
Mm. One final thing I'll just mention is I'm also planning to do like a Strava like blackout, like just make everything private. And this was something that, again, Rose suggested doing. It's just basically for my own sanity, really, as I build things back and do stuff like in the gym, just to do it off my own back. I found probably like the hardest thing of this injury is the number of opinions and number of like people reaching out, which obviously is incredible. Like, I absolutely love people dropping me a message and giving me some advice or like reassurance. It's been really nice. But I think moving forward, it's just it's getting a little bit much in terms of the daily, like people messaging me being like, oh, maybe you shouldn't be doing like biking, because when I had my femoral fracture, like I couldn't do anything, blah 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 blah. One man messaged me saying like, I looked at your scans and based off what it shows, I wouldn't be doing any weight bearing exercises for 2 months. So basically I'm going to work with Rose on getting back to running. But I think for at least a couple of weeks, I'm going to try and take a bit of a Strava break, just to avoid maybe some of those sort of comments that I don't necessarily need. And I think it will allow me to build back in a bit more of a sensible way, not having the pressure of showing the exact ins and outs of my training, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think that would be
But obviously,
wise.
still share things on here.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think similar, when I was just getting back into running and stuff, I had absolutely no desire to put an easy 30 minutes on and then like some boring strength session on Strava. So just naturally didn't really go on it at all, apart from when we recorded this podcast and I looked at you boys training. And now when getting back into running, I'm seeing people doing their big long runs in the build up to like New York Marathon or like training for Valencia and whatnot. And I think if I was to see that when I wasn't running, I'd have, yeah, it wouldn't have been particularly pleasant. And like you say, the opinions, you don't really need anybody's opinion apart from, if you decided to work with Rose, she's
Professional.
helped lots of people. She's got over a decade of experience with this sort of stuff. She's a runner, so she knows what she's talking about. Like, you don't really need anybody else's opinion. The same way, if you've got a coach, you're not going to be asking another coach for their advice if you're, being coached by someone else. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, right. But big up people that do engage, because the other side of the coin, and again, I'm not criticizing you at all, but it's people watching and engaging that is pays your bills. So the other side of the coin is like, yes, it's what you do with that information. Like, I think you're doing the right thing. Don't give a shit about what anyone says. Trust the people you trust, which is the experts. We're here because our job is to give opinions on a podcast, but ultimately trust your physio and the doctors and people that know way more. But at the same time, it's not no slight on anyone that's engaging or trying to be involved and like thinking that they're helping, because yeah, like I said, it's that engagement is the reason why we've got a podcast, you've got a YouTube channel, all that sort of stuff. So if you are one of them people who's commented, don't feel like Ben's having a go at you, because he very much isn't. He's more just
No, not
saying
at all.
that it's it's quite a lot where people are commenting shit. I mean, it's pissed me off. I had about 10 comments about, oh, are you doing a fartlek? Is this a fartlek or is this an interval session? Oh, man. Jesus. The first comments I got, I was like, what are they talking about? And I forgot we mentioned it on the podcast. And it kept going for like 6 days. And I was like, oh, my God, imagine if I was Ben and this was happening like on 100 times the scale about everything I do. That would be a nightmare. I get where you're coming from.
Yeah, it's just going to be on Strava. Like, I'm still happy to tell you guys, obviously, what I've been doing each week. But it's mainly just so that I focus, like, on what Rose is telling me, what experts are telling me in terms of like the recovery process. If Rose says after like 6 weeks I can start running again, then that's because based on all of my symptoms, based on the training that I've been doing, like, she knows all the factors, if that makes sense. A lot of people seem to comment, like, again, I'm not digging at community at all, because like I wouldn't be in the position I am today without followers, without the support I get across social media, that sort of stuff. But a lot of people don't know the full picture, if you know what I mean. So they'll comment on a individual piece of training that I've done, and they don't know like what I've been doing in order to get to that point, if that makes sense. But I think it'll just do me the world of good, I think, just to have a little bit of a Strava break. So just plan to go private for a couple of weeks until I can start building things back a little bit. And then we'll go from there. But it's looking like a minimum of a 6 week in terms of until I can get back to any sort of mileage whatsoever.
Are you going to announce on Strava that you're doing a Strava blackout?
I think it's probably best, yeah.
Yeah, if you do, right, do you know what you should do? You should say, if you want the exclusive updates on my training, you've got to listen to the Men in Three Ways podcast.
Yeah.
So we get loads more listeners and then we can profit off your broken bones.
Put it behind a paywall.
Genius. You know, we should just lie and say one of us has got a stressy every so often to get the podcast numbers pumping.
I think it's wise, to be honest.
He's working a treat.
One in, one out.
I'll get like a, I don't know. I was going to say something really rude there. I'm not going to say it. I'm not going to take the mick out of bad injuries. But yeah, maybe I'll be next.
Hope not.
Awesome.
Yeah. Most
if it is, then
important
just
thing.
A little like. Yeah, go on, Tom. Sorry.
Most important thing out of all of this. How's Meg enjoying Kenya? Because she's come out there with you. She's got to put up with Benny's not running. How's she enjoying herself?
No, yeah, she's having a great time. We've done some lovely things so far. Went on a safari on Sunday, which was really nice. She's actually been joining me in the gym and been doing a few of the core classes. She's actually been coming along to them as well. And I think I can't speak for her, but she's been really enjoying like doing a bit more exercise than she usually does, mainly because obviously she works a full-time job. So like many people, she doesn't have the time to go to the gym at 10 o'clock in the morning and, do an hour on the bike or whatever.
Yeah.
But no, she's been really enjoying it, getting her exercise in, doing a bit of touristy stuff. We're going to go out for dinner this evening at the Curio View. If you're familiar with Iten, it's one of the nice sort of like viewpoint restaurants. And she goes home on Saturday, so she's here for the first 10 days.
Okay.
And I hope she's enjoyed it. Yeah,
Yeah, nice. What's it
been good
like as a
fun.
tourist out there? Like if you're just like Meg, for example, and you're, like you say, she's mucking in with a bit of the exercises and stuff, but generally you're there to like explore and stuff. What's it like? Can you just go to a nice little cafe thing and then go out for dinner somewhere nice as well?
Yeah, so obviously it's a little bit different to your typical holiday.
Yeah.
It was more of like a cultural experience, I'd say, in terms of coming to a place like Aten. Obviously, like the level of poverty and deprivation is pretty high here, so you can't just like go down the road to a local restaurant and have a three-course meal type thing like you would on holiday if you were in Spain or something like that. There's a lot more of like just experiencing the ways of life here. To be honest with you, there's not a lot to do if you are coming from a tourist point of view. But like, even walking to the shops is an experience of coming to a place like this, if that makes sense, because it's just so different to what we're used to back in the UK and back in Europe.
Yeah, lovely. Well, I'm glad she's having a nice time. That's good.
Just wish
Awesome.
it for her, but it's been a bit cloudy. Never mind. We've still had a really nice time.
Yeah, the weather's class here, Ben. It's been what was it today, Tom? Like 29 degrees?
Yeah, something like that. Bloody hell.
It's four.
What
It's
you, what you...
dark at 4 o'clock, apparently. Yeah,
Yeah, I know, man. Bloody hell.
it's pretty grim. It
Yeah,
is
it's
pretty
good.
grim.
It's good for it's shit for training, but it's also good because like a lot of people give up this time of year, so it like lessens the pool of runners.
I
See what I mean? Like in the summer,
don't
everyone
think
can
you have to worry
train
at the
well.
top end,
When
though. Yeah.
it gets brutal, that's where you people stop pounding the pavements.
Yeah.
Anyway, I guess we should probably move on to Tom or me, whatever. Tom, what have you been doing?
I'll rattle through it. So, top line, I ran 4 days again last week. I'm going to up that to five now, I think, because things are feeling pretty good. And my week started on Tuesday. So I was a little bit not sore, but remember last week I did like that 5K sort of effort, if you like, and then my longest long run with Chris, who was pushing the pace a bit towards the end. So with two what would be considered quality days back to back by my standards at the moment, I took Monday off just to make sure that nothing was going to be a problem. So that was all good. And then Tuesday, I did some random distances this week, 8.8K, 4:43 pace, so just nice and easy. The next day, I did 10.5K. Got caught in a bit of a flood on this, which wasn't ideal. I don't know if it's the same where
Cool
you
route,
are.
cool route though. Not
Yeah.
just not an out and back, a little bit of a love heart balloon kind of thing.
Yeah, it's a great loop that is actually. But it's like really quiet, narrow country roads, and one of them was just a flood for a good like 200 meters. It was just water the whole way, which wasn't ideal. So I had to sort of scale a bit of grass and maneuver my way around it, which yeah, was a bit annoying. And that's why this run, I didn't do the full hour in the end, and add on a little bit extra. So yeah, 10.5K, 4:34s. And then went to the gym the next day. So I didn't run that day. And then I did 5 miles progressive on, what day is this? What day is this? Friday. Yeah, Friday. I did like a 5 mile progression. Averaged 3:57. Started at like 4:24, and last K was 3:36. So just going through the gears a little bit, and it's weird. I feel like at the moment there's a very fine line between feeling good and then tipping over the edge and feeling fucked. And that is, it's such a such a fine margin. Whereas, you know, when you're fit, you know, you can, even if you're suffering a bit, your lungs are burning, like your legs are tired, you can still just push through and maintain the same pace. Whereas at the moment, it's like, I think it's more mental than physical, to be honest, but things just hurt a bit quicker. So in my head, I'm like, oh, I should probably stop. I probably shouldn't run quite so fast. So I got rolling a bit too quickly on this one, and just had to like maintain that a little bit of fear of pushing things over the edge. But in the end, it felt all right. So that was good. And then last run of the week was a long run with Chris again. It's been so nice having him drive over. It's only about 10, 15 minute drive, I think, from where he lives, but it makes such a big difference having someone to run with like early on a Sunday morning. And we did 18K, hour and 18 minutes, 4:22 average. But again, started pretty slow, like 4:50s, and then got going quite nicely by the end. Got going like low 4 minutes by the end of that run.
How are you planning this without a coach? Are you kind of just seeing how you feel on each given day? Are you mapping out like this is going to be my plan for the week, or how's it working?
Yeah. So funny you mentioned that. I believe as of literally about 5 minutes ago, I'm going to be working with Andy again, like very imminently.
Nice.
So he's just asked me to send over my last 6 weeks of training, basically, so we can have a good little starting point. But I think I'm ready for that now, because like you say, Callum, I've mapped it out. So each week, if there's four runs a week, there'll be one either, you know, those little sessions or like a progression run or just something with a little bit more intensity to it. A couple of easy runs and a long run. And the long run started just pure easy. And then the last couple of weeks have felt good from about halfway. And so Chris has just sort of naturally started turning the screw a bit, because he's a lot fitter than I am at the moment. And I've sort of just been able to go with it without suffering too much. So that's how it's been at the moment. But going up to 5 days of running a week and feeling pretty decent, I think it's probably about time I got Andy involved, rather than just making up, you know, oh, I'll do 5 by 3 minutes off a minute next week, and then I'll do 6 by a K. And then, do you know what I mean? It feels, when I had a coach for so long, it feels a bit weird for me to just start making it up as I go along based off what I think might be about right. So yeah, that's where I'm at. Last week was 45K. And this week, nice. Probably decent, be a little bit more than that.
Yeah, I guess like from an outsider's perspective in your situation, I think like if I was advising you, I think like you're in a position where you want to be finishing most sessions thinking that you could do more.
Yeah,
that's kind of like from a feeling perspective. A lot of the times we think it's only been successful if we're finishing hands on knees, like bent over, coming home thinking, wow, that was a horrible session. I'm so glad that's done.
Yeah.
But in actual fact, it's way better just to get some B plus sessions and finish going, you know, if you do 6 by 3 minutes thinking at the end of the sixth one, oh, you know what, if I needed to, I could do 2 or 3 more reps at that pace, or finishing your progression thinking, you know what, I could progress a couple more miles if needed, just keeping everything sort of very controlled. Cause I think then you'll leave with a positive experience of the session and be motivated for the next one, rather than like you said, some days you're thinking, wow, this is tough.
Yeah.
It's like, this is really hard work. And maybe, you know, if it starts to feel like that too much, then you're probably, you know, overcooking it slightly.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And I think that's been the case with, if you look at the last like 4 or 5 Sunday runs, I think I started at like 12K and it was very, very slow. And then since then, just gradually like increased the distance to 10 miles last Sunday. And I think on that 10 miler was a bit of a turning of a page where I felt like if we kept going for another 5K, if we got up to like a half marathon distance, I would have been absolutely fine to have just maintained that same sort of pace. So yeah, I'm definitely doing that and we'll carry that forwards. And there's no way that I'm going to start working with Andy, and all of a sudden he'll be setting me, you know, like lung busting sessions. That's just not going to happen. So, yeah, I'm excited about the prospect of getting back with Mr. Hobdell and seeing what we can do. Because then he's already mentioned like getting a 5K fun run, he calls it, but you know what I mean, just like a low pressure, no time expectation, like 5K race, just to have a hard hit out and see where we're at. So
What sort of time scale we're looking at for that? Next month? This month?
I reckon before the end of the year. Yeah, before the end of the year. So within the next 6 weeks.
29th, Wednesday 29th of November. What are you doing?
Wednesday 29th of November.
Battersea Park, right?
Yeah.
Run through, chase the sun 5K.
Yeah, they're good, they are. They are good. I've done a 10K at the run through Battersea Park. It was actually pretty fun.
I'm going to be there, mate. You should do Yeah, I'll support you.
Do you know what? That's not bad. That's what, like four weeks?
That's exactly 28 days today.
Yeah, good stuff. Yep. Yeah. Well, I may see you there.
Alice is doing it for an official sub 25K attempt. So I'll be there supporting.
She'll probably beat me.
So get down. And if any of the listeners are doing it, let us know right in next week.
Yeah, please do. That would be nice, wouldn't it? We could have a little run it three ways, knees up.
It'll be so dark though, when we have to see a thing. I can't see anything when the sun goes down. Seriously, my eyesight is terrible.
The 10K I did round there, it was the same chase the moon situation, and it was literally pitch black. So it's a bit weird, but in a way, it's quite nice because you're not taking in your surroundings at all. You're just staring at the person's heels in front of you, making sure that you don't fall over. So it sort of distracts you a bit in that way, I think.
Yeah, decent.
Yeah, that'd be good.
Yeah, glad you're on the mend and joining Andy Hobdell's star-studded cast of of new runners that everyone's announcing that they're coached by Andy these days. So you're joining a good team, it seems.
Yeah, I honestly, I have no idea how he does it, because, you know, there's who's he picked up? He's got Ellis Cross now, Rory Leonard has joined the Hobdell
Scott Beattie
family. Yeah. so he's got quite a roster. But he's also still coaching, you know, people like me. I genuinely don't know how he's got the time in the day to do it, to be honest. But he's a special individual, Andy Hobdell.
Shout out, Andy. Right, shall I whiz through my week?
Yes, please.
Let me just navigate away from your Strava. Shall I just talk about the sessions? Because I feel like we've got plenty of listeners' questions and stuff. I won't talk about all the easy running.
Let's hear some sessions.
Sessions. So last week, my total volume was 85.5 miles. That's the highest I've ever done in a week.
Oh, baby.
So that was good. And my sessions were on the Tuesday. Sorry, I'm just going to cough one sec. On the Tuesday, I did... Sorry.
Your Strava's looking beautiful, by the way.
I didn't want it to like take out any headphone users if it did a really loud cough. So that was my attempt to do it away from the microphone.
That was brilliant. That's probably one of my favourite Callum Elson moments on the podcast.
Tuesday I did 8x5 minutes off 2 minute rest. These were all 450 to 445 per mile. So that's basically 8x just over a mile off 2 minutes rest. So that was good. Including the recoveries, we averaged 5:23 per mile. So that was good. Good amount of volume on the Tuesday. And then on my... So that was basically like my threshold stimulus for the week. And then on the Friday, I had a session that was pretty much the opposite of that, which was mainly for VO2 max and power and stuff while sort of minimizing load. And this was 10x hill, which rather than do it to time, I basically just went up the hill just because I couldn't be bothered like... looking at my watch, I was just like, I'm just going to run to that point and back. I think it was about 32 to 34 seconds per hill rep. So 10x hill, then 4 or 5 minute easy jog rest, and then 10x again. I've put 200 meters, might be slightly short. It was basically 10x 30 seconds ish. So yeah, super simple session, 10x 30 seconds up a hill, and then 10x 30 seconds on the flat, all around 4 minute mile pace, both on up the hills and on the flat. So yeah, this was my harder sesh. Go on.
Do you ever get any funny looks doing these type of sessions, like sprinting up the hills in the local park, or
especially out and back on a little path like this?
A little bit. Although, the basically what this specific hill that I do it on it goes from the busway, so like a bike path, over to a hospital. So there's not that much traffic of people like just going for a walk or like trying to enjoy the day. Pretty much everyone is commuting, either going to work in the hospital or leaving the hospital from work, and then mostly all on a bike. So they're not there for long enough to see me. They're either whizzing down a hill on the bike or they're kind of just concentrating on going up this really steep hill. So surprisingly, not that many funny looks. On the flat, I get quite a lot because it's like people walking with their pushchairs or whatever. So it takes them, I might do 5
reps.
You
just fly past at 4 minute mile pace.
Yeah, and guess what, right? My jacket got, I've lived in Cambridge for a year and a half or something like that, ages. And I always like tie a jacket to a lamppost or hide some shoes in a bush or whatever. Like, I'm a pretty trusting person. And for the first time, an item of my clothing got stolen.
Really?
Yeah, my saw jacket as well. Not a cheap bit of kit, that. And literally, I was doing out and back reps and they're only 30 seconds and there was 60 seconds rest between each one. So in the time that it's taken me to tie this jacket to a lamppost, I've done a rep out 30 seconds, rested 60 and come back. So that's a total of 2 minutes. And I got back and it was gone. So someone's clearly like seen me tie
Bastard.
It on, waited till I've run off and then taken it.
They knew what they were nicking.
Fair play to them. They've done a good job there, haven't they?
Yeah, but I've looked on eBay and Amazon, not Amazon, and Facebook Marketplace and eBay, because I thought maybe they've Googled the item they've stolen when they've got back and realized it's worth like 200 quid. So they're definitely going to try and sell it on, but I can't see any. So if I see anyone walking around in a saw jacket, I'm just going to be like, oh, nice jacket, mate. Where did you get that from? And let's see how much they know, because it's not the average consumer that purchases a saw jacket for 200 quid, is it?
No, it's a bizarre steal, isn't it, that? Like when you think about it, like what would you do with it if you weren't a runner? Because it's not like a casual type fitting thing, is it? It's quite slim and quite...
Literally.
Purpose built for running.
I reckon they just nicked it purposely to flog it, I reckon.
Yeah, and I thought maybe
worth a little bit of money.
There's a lot of kids that cycle then. I thought maybe it's like a bit of a laugh where they've taken the jacket and then they've kept cycling along the busway and then they've like lobbed it in a bush or something like that. So I ran up and down a couple of times thinking that, like, oh, maybe it's just like someone messing about. And it's not there. So you know what? Fair play. Whoever's got it, like, I hope they enjoy it. And you know, it's only going to spread the message of the brand. And I was fortunate enough to not have to purchase it myself, so it's not as much of a hit as if I'd paid for it. But just made me not trust the streets of Cambridge a little bit more, which is a shame because it's a lovely city. But yeah, that was my Friday. And that's actually... sorry, go on, Ben.
I had a similar situation where I lost one of my favourite vest tops that I'd taken off on a hot session down around my like 400-metre, used quite a lot. Like, I never see a single person down there, and somebody nicked my vest top. So just goes to show, like, they do, things do go missing. Can't trust everyone.
Yeah, but equally, my own fault. Why the hell would you tie a bit of clothing in this world and expect it to stay there? I don't own the lampposts, do you know what I mean? So yeah,
talk
that was Friday.
Talk to me about this blister, because I've seen the shoe you're wearing for it. I've heard certain people having similar issues Achilles rubbing and whatnot. That is menacing.
I didn't realize that was from this
that
run.
Yeah,
this is partially my own fault. So basically, going back to my Tuesday session, my 8x5 minutes, I'd not worn these on shoes for a while. I'd actually not worn them since I won the British Road Mile where I raced in them. And they've been in the cupboard. And for whatever reason, I thought, oh, I've not worn them in a while. Yeah, I'll switch it up. I'll wear them. And towards the end of the 8x5 minutes, I started to get a little bit of a blister, but nothing serious. And then I kind of forgot I had the blister when it came round to this session, so I didn't put a plaster or anything over it, which is my fault. I should have done that. And then I also wore the exact same shoes that had given me the blister again without thinking about it. So I was halfway through the hill reps and I was like, that really hurts now, but like, what options do I have here? Like, I had these massive heavy ASIC shoes that I jogged there in that I couldn't do the session in, so I was like, right, I'll just have to get through it. It looks way more dramatic than it was because it's a white sock and stuff like that. And the fact that the sock's got a hole in as well is quite funny.
Any favours with the sock choice there, mate.
No,
some cotton Nikes.
The hole wasn't that big when I started, but yes.
It's obviously rubbed through.
As much as it looks like I'm against this shoe, I still think it is a really, really good shoe. I just think the durability for my style of running is absolutely crap. So if I was getting it for free, I'd be made up because I'd be like, I've got unlimited access to a really good shoe. And if it breaks every month, that's fine. I get a new pair. But if I was a consumer that had to pay 240 quid every time I wanted a pair, then I'd be so pissed off because, yeah, mine is basically running on a carbon plate right now. It's like rotting wood. I think you compared it to.
Yeah.
Carbon, didn't you?
When you posted that picture from the first session of the week that you did in it, I couldn't believe what it looked like. It looks like it's decayed in the forefoot area. It doesn't look like just you've worn through the outsole. It looks like the foam's literally like disintegrating underneath, doesn't it?
Yeah. But I stand by that if you've got a brand new fresh pair and you're on a nice dry road surface, it is one of the best super shoes. For me personally, I think it's really good. So yeah, nothing against the Cloud Boom there. And a final thing on this session, as a subtle plug, I've got a YouTube video coming out. Charlie M filmed the session and we did some of the bits and bobs with it. So keep your eye out for that if you want to see me run up a hill. And then the only other bit of quality for the week was a long run on Sunday where I did 17 miles with 10 miles of it at like a steady state effort with Norman, Dom and Joe that are all training for various different marathon, half marathon, ultra type things. So they actually had 19 miles at about 5:35, 5:40. So I just jumped in for 10 of them. Hence why I've done a long run on a loop, which is a bit weird because they needed to get their drinks and stuff like that. So yeah, I just jogged 3 miles from my house to the loop, did 10 miles with them, jogged 3 miles back ish for 17 miles. And yeah, that was my week. Kind of same as it has been the last 3 weeks, to be fair. Thresholdy session once a week, VO2 maxi session once a week, and then a good quality long run. And now the week that we're recording, I've got a race. I'm racing the Mansfield cross country relays. So I've got a race this week. Then I'm racing for England in Spain next week. And then I've got Liverpool at the end of the month. So I've got 3 races in November. So the volume will be down a little bit from where it is. And obviously the focus will be on still training, but kind of doing one good session a week and then just recovering for the race effort and letting the other race be a kind of a stimulus in itself. So I won't be doing any hard long runs or anything like that, which is quite fun because the last 3 weeks has been nice to get into a routine and just like tick off the runs. But I just find it way more exciting when I'm racing and like you've got something to kind of look forward to and just, you know, life's just a bit more exciting, I think, when you're racing at the weekend. So yeah, looking forward to that. So that's a 5K-ish effort this weekend. So it'll be interesting to see how I do. And I'm on leg 4, which will be good. I've never been on the last leg for the relay. So hopefully I've got some people to chase down or run away from. And it actually kind of matters a little bit more than when you're doing one of the legs in the middle. So that's my training, boys.
It's a great week, that.
Hopefully you can break the tape.
Great weeks, in fact.
Yeah, three good weeks. And like the thing is obviously the winter before I had the Mile Champs national and world. So like your winter is a little bit disrupted. Ideally, I would have liked to do this kind of volume for 6 weeks or so, but like that's not the way that it's been able to pan out. So I've got in some good training while I can. And now still this week will be a great week of training plus a race effort. And then just build through. But yeah, at the moment I'm kind of working out what the season should look like between now and the summer with giving myself kind of the best chance of trying to do something good. And basically I've come to the conclusion that if I play it safe, which is basically do what I did last year, which is do plenty of cross country, do this, do that, and then just hope that I run fast in the summer, like I'll probably still do well, but I'm not going to do I've got not much chance of doing something spectacular enough to say make the Olympic team. Whereas if my chances of making the Olympics now are like 2%, let's say, you can't get much lower than 2%. But if you do something radical, you might boost your chances up to say 10%, which is obviously far times higher. So, you know, Eurocross is every single year. You have world champs in their 3 different formats of cross country, track and road. Like, you know, basically every year there's one of them. Whereas the Olympics is a standalone event every 4 years. So if you're not going to take a risk this year and try and do something pretty, you know, radical to try and get yourself to a major champs, then, you know, in my head, what's the point? Because who knows where we're all going to be in 4 years' time. So, yeah, I'm still working out with my coach right now what that looks like from a racing perspective, but it's looking very likely that I'll continue doing some of the longer stuff for the rest of November and December, and then January, February really have a proper go at indoors and try and run a really good mile, try and get a world indoor qualifying time if I can, do British indoor champs, like have like a bit of an indoor season and just try and get my world ranking basically as high as possible. So when it comes to the summer, I've got a chance to get into a race that might go 331, 332, rather than just do cross country for the whole of indoors. My ranking will fall because everyone else will get points from indoors. And then I'll be scrabbling around trying to get into races that might go, say, 334, 335, which is good. But look at, you know, it ain't going to get you in into Paris. So, yeah, that's kind of where I'm at right now. Hence why I'm doing the higher volume stuff rather than sort of focusing on the short course at Liverpool or anything like that.
Yeah, exciting stuff.
Yeah, that's kind of my my summary, so
very
to speak.
Good. Nice to hear.
Yeah, good stuff, boys. That was a very comprehensive rundown of all of our training and situations, I think.
I feel like it was. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I've ideally only got about 15 minutes left, if that's okay.
No problem. In
Mr.
that
Beast
case,
would be proud.
The running news, right? This running
yeah,
news.
Yeah, no worries.
Not news, but interesting story. Both Faith Kipyegon and Eliud Kipchoge use a budget airline to get home. Now, I'm assuming you've added this, Ben, based off the fact that Faith Kipyegon was on your flight to Iten or to wherever it is that you fly into to get to Iten.
Eldoret.
Is that right?
Yeah.
So it's not
it
really...
Is indeed, yeah. I just found it pretty interesting that...
But what else What's would that? They use? What else would they use?
Yeah. Helicopter.
I don't know, like a little private jet or something a bit more fancy. Basically, this like the plane from Nairobi to Eldoret is it cost about 80 quid. It's got about 40 seats on it and it's got propellers. It's not like top of the range. So I just thought, I don't know, well, thought it was interesting that some of the best athletes in the world are using budget airlines.
Do you see any of the planes landing there?
Yeah, I think so. Well, maybe that is the reason. Maybe that is the only plane. I don't know. I just found it pretty interesting.
Yeah, next time, when you fly...
It's not a story.
When you fly out the other way, have a look and see what planes you see. And if there's more, then I guess this story has got more value. But if you realise that actually every single plane there is like that, then
yeah.
I think you've got your answer.
Did you have a little chat with Faith?
Yeah, but surely... I did have a little chat with Faith, yeah. Got a little picture with her.
Yeah.
At the airport. It was very nice.
Was it? Yeah.
I wasn't going to bother her because there was quite a lot of people obviously getting snaps with her. But her she got in her taxi. Had a little chat. Very nice.
Did you tell her about the podcast?
I think I'm breaking up a little bit, boys. Apologies if I...
Oh, no. We've made it so far. Oh, no.
Yeah, you're Hello. Breaking up. Oh. You're breaking up a little bit.
Okay. You crack on with the news.
What else is in the news, Callum? Dublin Marathon. Stephen Scullion ran 2:11 for third.
Stephen Scullion third, won the Irish Champs. If you've not watched any of his content, go and watch it because he's been through a lot. 2:11 is a great run. Not obviously... This sounds brutal. It's still miles away from the Olympic time, which is 2:08, but it's still bloody fantastic run. So shout out to him. He'll undoubtedly make a really good video about it. So keep your eyes peeled for that. Shout out to him. Frankfurt Marathon was another good one. Tom Anderson, who's coached by Andy Hobdell that we're just discussing. He ran 2:12 for a PB and finished 12th overall. One of the first European athletes, I can only assume, if you're in the top 12.
Wanted to go a lot quicker, but conditions were shocking, apparently, in Frankfurt, wet and very windy.
Yeah, so, I saw that it was chucking it down, which can't be good for 2 hours of running. And then the only other marathon thing is it's New York Marathon the week we're recording. So there's Andy Butchart and Ed Cheserek that are kind of the highly anticipated debuts. But they're really strong fields, as you'd expect from New York. Not renowned as a super fast course, but always a really good race. And one name that's not on here is Helen O'Beary, I think, who I believe is doing it. And I think On Running are doing a bit of a... using it as a big kind of activation weekend, I would say. So, yeah, keep your eyes peeled for anything in New York. And if any of our listeners are going, then enjoy and good luck.
Yeah, I've got the fields up now and they are absolutely stacked. So if you're interested in your elite running at that sort of level, then Yeah, it looks good. You've got Cam Levins on the men's side as well, which will be interesting. Is that his first marathon since Tokyo? We ran 205.
No, right. I've not heard anything. So yeah, you'd think so.
Bridget Kosgei, Perez Jepchirchir on the women's side, Helen Abiri, like you mentioned. So yeah, bloody very good field from top to bottom, that.
Yeah, and it'd be interesting to see how Andy Butchart does. Because yeah, I'd be very surprised if he runs really quick, but he could do anything. You know, he's such a talented runner over 5K and 10K.
Yeah.
That, you know, who knows? Could he run the 208? Probably, but, well, I say probably, maybe, but not at New York, I don't think. So, yeah, I think he's just using it as a good bit of experience to then potentially target a faster course next year.
Yeah.
But we'll see. And then the only other thing...
He'll have a very sexy pair of shoes on his feet as well, Andy Butchart, in New York.
Are they a new colorway or a new shoe?
New shoe, so the Super Comp Elite V4 from New Balance. He'll be wearing in like a sexy prototype white colorway.
Interesting.
So yeah, keep an eye out for that.
Are images of those out anywhere?
He's been training in it, so you can go on his Instagram if you want to see it. There's nothing official that's been communicated, but you'll see a few influencer people running New York in that shoe, and then Andy Butchart.
Oh yeah, there's a YouTube video up on it as well from some geezer, Joanna.
Get on Joanna.
Yeah, there you go. And speaking of shoes, Tom, is it you that's written down here the Asics Nova Blast and the On Cloud Eclipse?
It's not actually. But yeah, it must have been Ben.
So unfortunately, at this point in the recording, the Kenyan Wi-Fi cut out, so unfortunately we missed the end of the podcast. But for those who tuned in, as Callum said, to hear about my tattoos, you're just gonna have to wait till next week to hear about those, unfortunately. But yeah, a couple of listeners shout outs before I end this podcast. A shout out to Liam Ward, a listener of the show. He ran Dublin Marathon this Sunday that's just gone. He actually reached out before the race to say that he was running it. So I want to just wish him, hope it went well, basically. Wish him the best. And finally, to end the podcast, this is a really nice story that came in as another listener shout out from a guy called Alessandro. He said, last Sunday, I ran my second marathon in Cologne. With 500 metres from the finish line, his back started to bend over and he struggled to keep running upright. Luckily, another runner, who he later identified as a German guy called Benjamin, noticed me, grabbed my arm and put me on his shoulders and helped me across the line. I'd like to call for a shout out for Benjamin. These acts of kindness are not obvious. He did not have to do it. He didn't know me, but ultimately these things are what make running and sport so beautiful. He didn't get a chance to thank him, so would like to do so on the podcast. And I thought that was a nice way to end this week's show. But yeah, nothing really else to add. Hope you enjoyed this week. We kind of touched on all the important things. Apologies if we didn't get to your listener question. We'll hopefully do that on next week's episode. And a reminder, if you want to submit your questions, you can do so via runitthreewayspodcast@gmail.com. Or drop us a message on the Instagram. But yeah, that's the end of episode 41. Hope you enjoyed it. Apologies about the Wi-Fi and if the audio was a bit terrible. But yeah, that's what I'm dealing with over the next sort of 5-6 weeks. So apologies that it's not the highest of quality, but at least you got a little bit of an update from us this week. But yeah, wish you all the best. Have a good week. If you're running, if you're injured, then stick at it. It's a tough place to be. Focus on what you can do would be my advice. But yeah, speak to you next week, guys. Thanks for tuning in. Bye-bye.